Hey everybody, welcome back to Sex, Drugs, and the Epigenome. I am back again, of course, with Dr. Seeds, and gosh, we have such a good show planned today, right, Doc? We're like going over some bullet notes. You don't know all the surprises I have in store for you yet, but I can already tell you're as excited as I am. So I hope everyone had a really great Labor Day. Real quick, before we get started, we have some very exciting announcements. First, Dr. Seeds' book on peptide therapy. It's the world's first book on peptides has officially launched. I will have the link where you can buy this book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble in the description of this podcast, so click on there. By the way, this podcast is a video podcast as well as audio. So if you haven't joined us on video yet, look for Sex, Drugs, and the Epigenome podcast on YouTube. You will find us there, but otherwise, listen on. One last announcement that we have is in kind of conjunction, and maybe Doc, you can say a couple of words about Peptide Therapy Foundations, but this is a digital course, both for health practitioners and for those just interested in learning more about peptide therapy. Dr. Seeds made a very comprehensive digital course. It's about 13 modules long and just clocking in under 9 hours, where you can learn about the foundational peptides that he uses in his practice that goes over some very, very specifics on very important specifics on the use of this peptide, the pathway, the dosage, as well as if they have some side effects, noting those. Doc, do you have anything else that you want to say about Peptide Therapy Foundations?
I think it's just a good overview of it's a good summary of the book, and it follows the book to in a way that makes it, I think, makes them work both well together. And I think we just spent a lot of time in really pulling out some of the important highlights of the book and making it more relevant in the discussion, teaching type of mode of where people could walk away with some good bullet points and some information that they could apply immediately in understanding, you know, what our message is about each of these peptides and how they relate to cell efficiency and cell senescence and metabolic flexibility, all the big things that we try to, the message we try to push here in a different way, I think, in looking at where medicine is really focusing in the future. And I don't think it's provocative. I think it's right on the money in bringing people up to date about the science of where we're at in understanding how the cell is so important and the mechanisms of the cell in guiding cell efficiency and flexibility and making our lives better. To adapt to stress, to adapt to viruses, to adapt to basically anything. And I think we do an excellent job in pushing that message forward, and it makes it, it really flows well. And I really appreciated the time that we put into that to make this, I think, a top quality video series that highlights, again, the important points of most of the basic peptides that are important in considering when you're looking at all of these aspects of improving cell health. And it's again, it's a nice tie-in with the book, which is expands a lot more into other areas, but it really is a nice combination together.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. I love that you said it's not provocative, because everyone that I've spoken to that's new to peptides sees it like a very provocative thing, but little do they realize peptides have been around for ages
I think that's I just think it's people just don't understand, you know, we're talking about real mechanisms. Peptides are, you know, we know of over 7,000 of them in the human body. And we, they're enzymes, they're ligands, they're hormones, they're receptors, they're signaling agents. And we're now in an era of where this knowledge has everything to do with precision-oriented approaches to improving cell health. And when you understand the relevance of these pathways and how to improve cell signaling when needed, based on the efficiency of the cell, boy, you can go a long way in really changing, I believe, changing the health of every human being on this planet. And we should bring up also dogs.
and kids. that is a really nice segue into the topic of today's podcast, Doc. So thank you for that. Today's topic is something that's dedicated to my best friend's new baby and, of course, her kids, but also all the other parents out there. There are a lot of you. We're going to focus for the next, 30 to 45 minutes about kids' health. But real quick before we do, just a check-in on last week's challenge that Dr. Seeds put in front of us, and that was to put my beautiful 10-pound dog, Toby, who's kind of a monster too, but putting him on a raw food diet. So I did this for a week and a couple days now. And I've got to say, Doc, I messaged you like 3 days after we pushed him onto this diet. And I was like, Toby's looking cuter. Like his fur lightened up. It got so soft because before he was this wiry, kind of a wiry dog. And I thought, oh, okay, well, I just don't have a very soft puppy. But he's so soft now. It's the cutest thing. And because his fur is soft, I don't know if it made him just like a lighter shade of beige, but he's so cute. And his eyes, they're huge eyes. They're brighter and just overall super cute. There's no other way to describe it. But also the biggest change that I saw was in his weight. He's no longer like fat, because he was kind of fat before. Now he's just like leaner and just denser. He got like muscle or something happening. So I've been just like, what is happening to my dog? And this is not a lot of time that's gone by. I just have to say, I'm in awe.
it's all about, again, realizing the nutrients that the cell needs to be at its most efficient state. And we know with animals, the raw food is absolutely the way to go. And unfortunately, all these packaged and type of foods are not, these processed foods are what are putting our animals into diabetic states and immune states with diseases that we see in humans, and cancer, significant cancer rates in animals. And you've just taken a huge step in changing that, those substrates, meaning those sources of energy for the cell, for your dog. You've changed the game there, and you've realized, this is a great example of what's happening in our world today of, all the things we eat out of boxes and cans
and junk,
processed stuff that is
fast food.
Yeah. 80% of what's in a grocery store. Oh. This is a perfect example for you to see how diet can really be that significant. I mean, diet food is like a pharmaceutical. It's no different. It's this is something that is driving the efficiency of the cell. It's driving the everything that we talk about in improving cellular health is all about the food sources, the proteins and the fatty acids and the carbohydrates and how those, what forms they are able to get them in. And I'd ask you this. I'd say, have you noticed anything about Toby's mood? You know, younger dogs get crazy when they're on these, not crazy, but they're very hyperactive. And
he's crazy.
I wonder if you've seen any changes in the mood of the dog.
Yes. So Toby, we many people nickname their dogs, you know, Monster, but we call him the Toby Monster because every morning, like clockwork, as soon as he wakes up, the first thing that he does after he takes his morning, you know, relief is bring a toy and just throw it on our heads, and he's knocking our heads with his paws, and he's just freaking out because he needs to play. I don't know. And he will terrorize us for like an hour, and then he'll start to give up. But now it's like he goes and does his thing in the morning, comes right back up to bed, and he sleeps. He's just like super, super chill, which is crazy.
Right.
In a week. So, well, Doc, is it changes this fast just because he's so small? Because he's a 10-pound thing.
Well, he's in a growth state too. So yeah, some of these changes can be very fast just by changing the food, you know, the food source. And I can't wait for you to see the continued improvements, you know, in his alertness, his I like to call it mood, but his activity level, I would say, you know, is he hyperactive or is he more controllable, and how well does he listen? How well can you work with him in training him? I think you're going to see all of these things significantly improve. But the fur and the eyes and the no draining, all of those things are big indicators that you're absolutely on the right track.
That's awesome. Well, speaking of things, living beings being in a changing state, that is a really nice segue into talking now about kids' health. This is a big topic, and it's really for the parents, of course. But we had mentioned a couple of things before we started recording. So, Doc, I'd love for you to kind of work through that list with me, the most important things for kids' health, and then I'll like pop in our questions as you go. But, Doc, what's the first thing that you want parents to really pay attention to?
I mean, I think first and foremost is always going to be sleep schedule for young kids. And it's not only the sleep of a guaranteed 8 hours of sleep, but it's always a consistent bedtime, consistent same time bed. And that can make a dramatic change in absolutely everything we profess, you know, about improving sleep cycles and improving the things that go wrong when kids don't get the right sleep, because they're in a growth phase also. There's a lot of things that are changing. You know, the circadian clock, the centralized circadian clock is so focused on getting the right signaling, you know, in the morning and not being up late watching TV or being on a computer. All of those things can affect the circadian rhythm of the body, specifically in the brain, the master pacemaker, where if that's disrupted, it affects all of the peripheral circadian clocks. And that can have, over time, can have significant effects on cell efficiency and metabolic flexibility. So those are things that you've heard me profess just in talking about keeping the cell in the best state it can be, and to avoid immune compromise and all the bad things that can happen when you lose that control. And these are easy habits to get kids into, especially with the school year and with how this COVID issue is keeping more kids at home, where they're going to be even more focused on a screen, that we really pay attention to this later evening activity of having them involved in video games or even television later. I really believe that And I think data shows us that this light disruption can make a difference in that circadian rhythm aspect of the brain and will certainly affect their sleep. Because sleep for kids is number one on the list because of growth and repair of the body. And that is that's probably one of the biggest things you can control and get your kids into a good habit.
I just thought of a crazy question, and you might roll your eyes at how stupid this is, but you were mentioning things about, you know, the sleep obviously being the time of repair and growth, especially in that growth phase of being a kid. I was playing video games very late into the night. Is that why I'm so short, Doc?
That explains a lot about you. Oh, I can't say that. You know, that's a stretch. But it definitely didn't help you. Let's put it that way.
Is there a lot of brain kind of, at what age does the brain continue to kind of grow? I guess is the most medical term that I can come up with.
Well, the brain is going, it's learning. So it's continuing to go through, develop new pathways, neuroplasticity of the brain continues up into the early 20s. So this is something that is, the brain continues to go through repair, stem cell activation in the brain to develop new pathways with new learning that is really important in the development of children. Not only that, but also the immune system. If we're not getting that proper amount of sleep, we're going to affect the immune system also. And that's another important aspect of something where the family can control the immune modulation of a younger child in favor of better health, especially in times like this of where we're dealing with viruses like COVID and the influenza virus coming up also. So we're going to have the double whammy here. Sleep is going to be very, very important.
And sleep is, I brought up the growth thing, but really I was getting to like the brain, right? This is something that I don't think is the normal people think about in their kids' health. You know, they want to make sure they have their kids fed, healthy, they do their homework and go to school, et cetera, et cetera. But they're not thinking about, or at least I'm not, in the growth of the brain, and therefore the reason why video games at night might not be the best thing. What about, Doc, the blue light glasses? Do those help at all?
Yeah. So the blue light glasses, the blue blockers can be helpful and that has something to do with what I've discussed about the circadian clock in the suprachiasmic nucleus or the hypothalamus. The signaling, it controls certain light waves that can get back into the eye and through the optic nerve. There are other type of glasses too that people have tried to promote, different wavelengths that also could potentially be important. There needs to be a lot more data on that to be significant. But the blue blockers can be effective, definitely, with the screen at nighttime.
Nice. So
that can make a difference.
So a little parenting hack might be to get your kid if you have trouble getting them off video games at night, just get them a real dorky pair of blue light glasses. And threaten taking a photo of them.
It can make a difference with that and with television. You know, there's so many visual effects that are changing in video games and in some of these movies that younger people are watching now that definitely can have that effect on the
absolutely.
I remember
seeing warnings on certain movies, like action films, where if you have epilepsy, that it's a warning that the lights have been known to cause seizures. And crazy things like that, but I totally get you. What about Doc? Okay. What about, just talking about the screens for a second, is, and this is, I don't know if it's just with Asian parents, but they, as kids, we would always be right up close to the screen and be looking at that. Is that as bad as my mom would badger me for?
Is that as bad with your mom what?
My mom would always nag at me to back away from the screen because I'm always like this up close watching TV.
Well, I think it's, so you're getting a greater intensity of all of that light at night. That's the only thing I would say, again, is this disruption of this circadian clock.
Mom's right yet again.
It, the farther back you are, you've also got other radiant light, darker. It's not as intense into the optic nerve. So I think it does, I think that does play into the, again, the disruption of the circadian rhythm. The other thing is being in, you know, an office setting at nighttime with the bigger lights. That's also something that can be, have a significant effect the later
you stay up. Because they have fluorescence in schoolrooms too. Like they're just really cheap lights, so.
Yeah, that during the day, that's not as much of an issue. I'm just talking about, because you're really, you know, we're all based on the rotation of the Earth, which is about 24 hours. And the same thing with light and daylight and nighttime. And we've evolved based on that first light coming into the eye and then through the optic nerve to the suprachiasmic nuclei that start this production of genes. They activate genes that start turning on pathways. And what we don't...
The lights do.
Excuse me?
The changing of the lights? Wow!
Yes. And that's something that... we don't want to overstimulate at nighttime when the brain needs to turn things off. I mean, that's part of what melatonin turns off the circadian clock. You know, this is an issue with people that are blind because they no longer have those, that signaling the same as you and I do. And so their circadian mechanisms get altered also.
Oh, wow. It's fascinating.
So really, even your screen, you know, now that these phone companies have done a much better job of changing the screens to make them nighttime oriented, so yeah, they're darker, so you're not getting that bright light. And those things really do make a difference. If you look at sleep studies that have been done that focus on how sleep can be disrupted, you can see that the stages of sleep change, in particular stage 4 sleep and REM sleep can be affected. And these are very important aspects of sleep for younger people because that's when they get their growth hormone surge, which is the most important at the very beginning of the sleep, in that stage 4. They need that for repair and rebuilding and growth, and also for drainage of what we call lymphatic drainage from the brain that will drain, basically the best way to think about it is it's draining lymph from the brain or toxins from the brain in that period of time. So it's very important that they get that sleep or they're going to lose those mechanisms of repair. And they've evaluated this and how light, certain disruptive lights and staying up later can affect those mechanisms of sleep where kids lose that time. And these lead to immune problems. They lead to diabetes. They lead to basically cellular inefficiency where a lot of things can go wrong. I think it's linked also into more of, you know, people with, when they stay up later like that, they tend to want to eat later also. Mm-hmm. Eating later is not a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple reasons. basically altering again the insulin signaling that will increase the potential of developing type 2 diabetes based on that. And also younger kids can run into more problems when they're eating later with early esophageal regurgitation, things that we don't really pay much attention to, but are becoming more prevalent problems. And you're seeing that in a lot younger people because of these eating habits where, you know, it used to be dinner was eaten at 5, 6 o'clock at night. And now that's being pushed back, where you're seeing younger kids eating at 8 and 9 at night. And I'm just going to tell you that it's not a healthy way to get ready to go to sleep when you're eating so close to bedtime because of esophageal regurge and things like similar to that that can disrupt your sleep cycle and lead to other issues.
All of these things that you're mentioning, good nutrition, obviously, for good nutritional value, but they're all leading down to your number one thing for kids, which is sleep. Which when we first started this conversation, I thought you were going to say, Doc, just from our past conversation, I thought it was going to be nutrition, but I was wrong. You said it was sleep, but I'm like, what? And it makes sense. I can see why this is number one on your list of priorities.
Just go and ask the teachers today what they've noticed the most about young kids or the teachers that have been teaching the last 10 or 15 years, and they'll tell you they all come in tired. And they have...
They shouldn't. They're kids.
It's a problem. And
wow.
It's a fixable problem, and it's all about routine.
Doc,
Funny. What's that?
What about coffee in kids?
Negative. It's probably not a good idea right now.
There's no side effect of.
Well, it's just that I think it's just they, again, they're set up to be very efficient in how they utilize energy. Coffee can just be too much of a stimulant for younger kids as they're developing, and they're just too. You know, they're in a place where I don't think there are benefits at all to that other than unless it's utilized potentially at the right time. But I don't think that's a smart plan.
Does this also apply to teenagers?
I believe so.
Oh wow!
They're still in that phase of growth, and again, their cells are very responsive and. It's something that I don't believe they need.
Wow. So everything that you're saying kind of like falls into place. Our last conversation about pregnancy, you wouldn't recommend any peptides for you being, you know, the peptide man. You wouldn't recommend that for a pregnant woman because they're in like the best state. Just like you're saying about kids, you rarely say that. But we talked about briefly earlier about the peptides. We'll get to that in a second. But you are basically saying they're in a really good state. And you just said their cells can react very quickly and they don't need to be overstimulated. I love that. That makes perfect sense.
Well, if you think about it, I mean, this is the most optimized state. And it's where learning is accelerated. It's where repair is accelerated. They have all of the growth factors. They have all of the peptides in their favor. And the goal should be to keep that momentum at its highest. And sleep, as I said, is very important. And then nutrition and exercise are probably right next to that, or right below that in that category. To really make that triad of health for young kids. And we've gotten away from, you know, if we talk about nutrition, again, the diet is so important for these young kids and how they're eating. And in fact, the portion, not only that, but the portions of foods and more significant, more processed type of carbohydrates, the wrong kinds of saturated fats, and potentially not enough protein where they are in these growth phases where they need more protein. And that can have a significant effect on growth. And this is where we've talked about like the pro-peptide lifestyle of eating, and this really, really resonates well with children in teaching them right in the beginning to start when they're looking at their plate, to really start teaching them about what a protein is, what a vegetable is, and what a carbohydrate. Like, so a vegetable is a different type of carb, but you know, where those food groups fit, because if you eat your protein and your vegetables before the carbohydrates, that will absolutely control how you get these insulin surges after eating your meal. And what you want is a more leveled insulin. You don't want a spike of insulin. If you eat your carbohydrate first before your protein and your vegetables, you've lost the battle and you've gotten that spike. If you eat your protein and your veggies first, you can absolutely control that spike and lower it. And just by diet change alone in looking at, and these are very important papers that have come out over the last couple of years, just focused on timing. We could manage a ton of this type 2 diabetes in the world if we could focus on that. And that's something that's manageable. That's something you can control. That's something the parent can teach the child, and the child can become very efficient in doing that. It also plays into, something we've talked about with adults in how we could also manage type 2 diabetes or obesity is after that meal, again, about controlling insulin, you get up and you move, you go out and you walk, or you go ride your bike, or you get outside instead of eating and then going back and playing video games or getting on your computer. You gotta be active after eating. Again, this can change that whole spike type of insulin activity that I talked about, where we want a more level production of insulin. So we don't see these drastic changes in glucose, because that's where inefficiency is. And we could do so much more with that if we really just changed a couple of things, meaning timing and activity, when your activity is after a meal, it could be significant.
That's awesome. Those are such great tips, easy tips too. So when you're at a restaurant, just eat the bread last. Yeah.
Well, that's absolutely right. What comes out first? Bread. That's bread. Probably the last thing you want to eat first to control that insulin.
And Doc, just because I am not a health practitioner, I don't know why it's such a bad thing for insulin to spike. What's happening there? In the most like layman's terms you can.
It's just about a bigger surge of glucose. It's how glucose, which is what the carbohydrate can be broken down into, or proteins through gluconeogenesis, or fatty acids can eventually be broken down into other sources of energy for the cell. It's something where you just want to see, you don't like to see big surges in some of these hormones. You want a more level playing field of everything, because it affects the cell in a much more efficient way, where it can, instead of getting all of a sudden a big load of something, it gets a more dispersed amount of glucose, basically.
I see. So it's that totally makes sense. You're like funneling it rather than like, bam,
yeah,
absolutely. Get all of this. Wow. Well, just looking back, Doc, to my go-to school lunch back in over 25 years ago when I went to high school, I would eat a cup of noodles every lunch, or like those Pizza Hut breadsticks dipped in marinara was my favorite lunch of all time. And it was always like that. It was never anything that I was supposed to eat.
Wow.
But I did exercise a lot.
Well, it's, you know, these are just...
That must be why I'm so short.
These are little things that will accumulate and build and build and build. And that's the problem that people don't realize, of how these things just build on themselves and then become issues later on in life also.
Right.
So you're starting good habits that I would try to tell you, you can absolutely change the destiny of the efficiency of how these cells work by those three things: sleep, nutrition, and activity after eating could be significant.
That is so, I love that.
And the science is behind it. The papers are there.
So we didn't mention this, but it goes without saying, you do not recommend soda ever in life, actually.
No, I don't even think that exists in my home. It's not any of the juices. It's water, tea. I'm okay with kids with some teas.
What about club soda, which is just carbonated water?
I think that's fine.
Okay, because that's like LaCroix, Waterloo, those things are really, really popular and always in my house. So
I was curious. Yeah, I think that's fine. But basically just, you know, water, tea. What else? What am I missing? I am a big proponent in younger kids with milk, more of the A2 milk.
What's A2 milk?
It all depends on the type of casein or the protein that they're getting, and how that's utilized in the body, and those that seem to come from more like Guernseys and Jersey cows. They have a better type of milk product, and that's a whole, we should do another whole nother thing.
Wow. Jersey, like New Jersey cows?
Yeah, Jersey. Well, they're called Jerseys and they're called Guernseys, and they just have a better fat makeup in the milk.
Wow.
And they have the A2 type of protein, the casein protein.
So it's cow's milk, but a certain cow.
Correct.
Wow. Yeah. How can you even tell where the cows are from?
You gotta read where your milk came from.
Oh my God, I had no idea that this was a thing. Wait, so I heard that California cows are super happy. What about California cows?
It depends what kind of cow it is, again. You know, the Holsteins are cows that have been, it's the most popular milk, but they're the ones that have been bred the most.
Oh.
They have the A1 type of casein or the protein, which is seems to be more of an inflammatory type of product.
Oh, wow.
So all of those things make a difference.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so this is a great bridge into my biggest question that I had for you. And you mentioned this, that the biggest issue with kids is the GI issues, right? The gut issues. Eating a bunch of chips, Flaming Hot Cheetos, not good for the gut. And probably causing a lot of constipation. Like my best friend's baby, she had to stop dairy because of constipation. But what if she had switched to an A2 thing, right? A Jersey cow?
Well, that may not, I mean, there are some that have lactose intolerance.
I see.
And so that can be could be a factor. It just depends. I think the milk product is important. And the You know, we could get into this debate about raw milk, which I think is the ultimate, because raw milk has the enzymes, like people that are lactate deficient. Mm-hmm. They can drink raw milk because it has the enzymes in there to digest the milk, where the milk that's homogenized and the milk that's pasteurized, it degrades a lot of the enzymes that come in the raw milk that are so important to keep some of these biological active proteins viable, and some of the enzymes that are really important in helping you digest the milk you drink. So
wow.
There are excellent raw milk facilities around the country. They are state-to-state regulated. Some states don't allow raw milk. California does, certain states on the East Coast and in the Midwest, and in the Midwest do. And that was something that my children were raised on, raw milk.
Wow.
And we used to go to a farmer's market, and we would get the raw milk from a known dairy farmer who was doing this for, 50 years. And so it's all about your sourcing.
Yeah.
And understanding, again, the type of cow that can make a difference. And then you've got a really good source of protein and carbohydrate. Mm-hmm. And a really good, because, milk, if you think about it, milk is one of those products that can cross species. You can take cow's milk and raise a dolphin. You can take cow's milk and raise, a different species of mammal with cow's milk. That's a pretty incredible thing, that you can.
Oh, wow.
That milk crosses species. It just tells you of the power of the substrates that are in milk, and that's where whey and casein protein come from. So there's a lot to that.
So hearing this, I would say that you are not a big fan of the nut milks.
No, I think there are, like, walnut milk. I think there are places for all of that, actually.
Oh, okay.
I like some of those more specialty type of, I like some of the ideas behind some of those. Absolutely. Almond milk, walnut milk. We go through some of those routinely. We kind of rotate through them.
Mm.
But I think there are pluses for all the way through with a lot of these products. Absolutely.
That's really cool. But for kids, the Jersey cow milk is
free. I think the Jerseys and the Guernseys are your best.
That's a funny word.
Yeah, I know.
The Guernseys. I love that. Awesome. So what about people dealing with kids? This is a big thing. Dealing with constipation.
Yeah, I think that's a... So... there's the other aspect of making sure your children are hydrated enough, right? So they're not drinking a lot of Coke and things like this. Water is important during the day. Activity is important. And the right food is important. So you can get in with a lot of those processed foods. You can get into a lot of issues. And with heavy carbohydrate diets, you get into a lot of issues with GI problems, and that's probably one of the higher issues of younger kids with problems is a lot of GI issues, and just the things we talked about: sleep, diet, and exercise can have a significant effect on that.
The trifecta. I like it.
The triad, yeah.
The triads are actually a mafia group, a very, very notorious mafia group in China.
Really?
Yes, the triads. Like this, like the Chinese version of the Yakuza.
Yakuza, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, that's your Asian culture lesson today.
Thank you for that, Karen.
You're welcome, sir. So let's get into peptides, because I do want to mention that this for our listeners. You don't recommend too many peptides, but which one do you recommend, Doc?
Well, so there are some easy ones. There are some relevant peptides that can be very important, especially in the younger, obese, diabetic children. There's a dipeptide that is out there as a supplement that you don't have to get a prescription. It's called L-carnosine. And L-carnosine has been relevant in studies of showing how we can reduce glucose insulin resistance and improve glucose tolerance of these people with just using L-carnosine. These are pediatric papers that are really relevant and are just as effective as things like metformin or similar other ways to try to reduce glucose. But this is something that is good for the cell. It has antioxidant properties. It has chelating properties to work against metals, heavy metals. It has buffering capacities to work as a buffer. It's an excellent peptide, and it's very inexpensive, and it can have significant ramifications in improving your child's aspects of a poor diet. And in fact, it is it works even better in kids that have increasing N-glycation products, which means they're getting too much glucose, and this excess glucose can do things to change the post-translational changes of proteins and signaling agents that lead to type 2 diabetes and the issues that ensue with that. And this is probably, I would say this, in my mind, there is nothing better and more healthy than for a child to take L-carnosine, because it's been studied in pediatric journals and it's been recommended as a potential treatment instead of a drug. That's amazing, right?
Oh yeah.
So that's a simple, no, in my mind, a simple way to get people indoctrinated into there are choices you have that you don't realize are out there that have that significant ability to change the beginnings of bad things that happen when kids are in those processes in the wrong diet setting and not eating properly. And
very cool.
Yeah.
I'm on Amazon right now, and there are just so many brands to choose from. Is there one that you trust more? Because it's just a long list and they're all slightly different. Some of them include other things.
Yeah, I do. I do. I like all of the, I like NutroBio. NutroBio is typically all of their amino acids and products like the dipeptide L-carnosine, not carnitine, L-carnosine, is well represented. And they do a really good job, I believe, in getting pharmaceutical grade amino acids and products, and they've always had a great reputation. I think they lead the market in that. So,
and it's very inexpensive, as you said. We don't have any affiliation with NutriBio. I think we're just Dr. Seeds is a fan of it, and I'm it's in my cart. So I'm kidding.
Yeah, I hope people appreciate, you know, I try to bring out anything relevant I think that I use with my patients, and that I feel is something that, not that others can't be trusted, I just feel they have a good track record, and I know what they do with all their other products, and they're always top of the line.
Oh, and you'd use on yourself and your family. I've seen this in your, recall seeing it in that lab of yours where you just try everything under the sun. Little mad scientist-y. It's fantastic though. You're trying it on yourself before anyone else.
Well, and you got to test that. You got, you know, they're, it's relevant that these type of products need to be tested and looked at. Are they truly representing what they say is in that bottle that they're giving you? And it's scary out there what people don't know.
This is really, really valuable stuff. So just some key takeaways, right? The trifecta, the triad, right, of kids' health, as we call it, is sleep, numero uno.
Sleep at the top of the pyramid, and yep, then nutrition, and then, you know, at the corner, nutrition and activity, right?
Nutrition and activity, just as important, and on the level corner, right? Like, it's not a weird isosceles triangle. It's a equilateral
triangle.
Yes, high school geometry coming into use for the first time ever. I like it. Folks, that is all the time that we have today. I hope you enjoyed this fascinating conversation. First of all, I had no idea there were types of cows. So the weird word that you said, plus the Jersey cows, what was it again, Doc? Guernsey?
Guernsey.
Cows are just such a cute, funny word. Makes me laugh every time I hear it. And if you have pets, make sure we get them on the raw diets. I will be listing what I did for Toby, and how much I did for Toby based upon the last conversation in the description below too. So you can check that out. Try it for a week. Try this challenge for a week. Guaranteed you're going to see something similar, if not better, than what my Toby Monster has seen. So, Doc.
It's a game changer.
It really is. It really is. And man, we do anything for our pets and the kids in our lives. So hope this was very valuable. Folks, just as a reminder, send all of your questions to Dr. Seeds, your canine questions, your feline questions, your toddlers or your teenage questions, over to info@seeds.md. We will make sure to get those answered for you. I hope this was as enjoyable a listen as it was a conversation for myself. Thank you to Dr. Seeds for joining us again this week. Folks, we will be back again. Thank you, Doc.
Hey, great to be with you, Karen, and great to hear how well Toby's doing. I can't wait to hear more about Toby.
I will keep you updated.
All right, awesome.
Bye.
Bye-bye.